Doug, how about I was going to ask you about this, about other books that we looked at. What ties do you make?
What ties do I make?
So I see. I'm like.
Oh, I see. Tied I see. Up. The larger sink. Like last time you mentioned. Well, it's hard not to pull in the Gaddis with the Mithraism, right? So the ritual to romance.
Aspect. Yeah.
And so he was exploring. Yeah. That.
Moby Dick is a big one, of course, right? But
well, now you'll have to make me.
But did you read that? I mentioned about that. Do you remember in Don Quixote, the cave of Montesinos?
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually went and kind of poked around there.
It's Enchantment by Merlin, the sage from Britain. And he goes in and it's a grail. He has a vision in this cave.
Then how did you find that?
Somebody mentioned this. I looked. I found an essay or something where this guy mentioned this. Then I looked it up and it says, like, then through the crystal wall I saw a mournful procession of the most beautiful damsels, all in black, marching in two ranks with turbans on their heads after the Turkish fashion. And last of all came a majestic lady dressed also in mourning with a long white veil that reached from her head down to the ground. Her turban was twice as big as the biggest of the rest. She was somewhat beetle-browed. Her nose was flattish, her mouth wide, her lips red. Her teeth, which she sometimes discovered, seemed to be thin and snaggy, but indeed as white as blanched almonds. She held a fine handkerchief, and within it I could perceive a heart of flesh, so dry and withered that it looked like mummy. So that's the grail in this one. If you have this idea that this is all secret history that's coming through literature, right? Like and then in other media afterwards, right? Then yeah, what is Don Quixote trying to say?
I don't know how well this has gone for you. How far are we into this?
It's 10:41. We're moving towards bedtime.
Okay.
And that's probably 9:41 for you.
I don't, it's really not a 41 at all for me right now. It's very soupy. Lovely, but very soupy right now. The getting away from the city, the compression of the city is fantastic, but it's still there. It's getting worse, I think. So is this the state of sync part of the conversation? I said this in a last conversation with Alex and John Fell Ryan. It's like, where's the sync, the new sync voices out there?
But what if sync isn't the paradigm anymore?
Ooh, god damn it, Doug. Really?
I mean, but maybe sync is always the paradigm.
Because Plate used to make fun of me because I used to say, what happens when we run out of it? What happens when it flips? He goes, it never does.
maybe it does.
It does.
Or yeah. I don't, it could be the wasteland. It's the wasteland.
Yeah.
Right?
Ooh, fucking dog.
And so you need Parsifal and you need Gawain to get to the
Gawain's world. Party time.
Just on.
Garth sounds very 14th century, you know.
Oh, Gareth, yeah.
Gareth, there you go. Yeah, totally.
I think there was a knight called Gareth, wasn't there?
We'll get there. They're all there.
They're all there.
in the Mallory, because I think he just takes all the different sources and puts them all together.
Yeah, that's why it's going to be fun.
What's that?
He's like Robert Anton Wilson. He just throws it all into the blender.
But it's like if you have three different Batman, he puts all three in there. So you got Michael Keaton, you got Val Kilmer, you've got anyone. The one guy, Adam West. They're all in there. You've got all the Batman in there in different scenes. Here's gay Batman. Here's not gay Batman. You know, it's like
non-binary Batman. There's COVID-19 Batman.
Batman. Half penguin Batman.
Lab Batman.
So did we miss anything, Doug?
Yeah, every time we miss, I don't know, like, because we do it and then I think, well, we need to spend more time here. That's for sure.
Ooh. Parzival is a later incarnation of the mythos, right? Parzival, by the German.
Yeah, Wolfram von Eschenbach. Yeah.
Is when? Is 16th century?
No. It's like 50 years later.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only 50 years later. So when does Wagner do?
It's about 1200 or something. He does it in the 1900s.
Yeah.
Okay. So 1800. I'm saying 700 years later, they pick it up and Wagner's like, this, I'll fuck with Parzival. Right.
He changes it again. Right. And this is what, we can get into that. Like when we come to that, but it's like, that's when Nietzsche goes against Wagner, because he's like, you Christianized the entire thing, you know, like you took Wolfram and then just made it a Christian moralistic message, which it was like that from the start. So I don't know what Nietzsche is on about, really, but but yeah, Wolfram is a lot more.
I didn't realize
it's a lot it was more pagan.
Born after the French.
Yeah, did you listen to the first podcast, Doug? Bill, on Wolfram.
I don't think I did.
Yeah, well, you have to go back and.
I have to now.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that time frame. I thought the Wolfram was closer to the Wagner opera.
Yeah, we started out of phase a little bit. We went we went back and we had to catch up on the Kretsch.
It's probably appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't. It's hard to know, because you can't. There's no beginning.
That's right. Yeah.
There's a missing link, or there's not a missing link, and we just have to go deeper into the ritual side of things. The Fraser, the Weston.
Well, the dark forests are alive. In that gap between Wolfram and Crichton. Is it Crichton?
No, Michael Crichton. That was probably... he wrote some... Yeah, Michael Crichton.
The Jurassic Grail.
Didn't he write some time travel story with knights? He totally...
He's totally all in that 70s. Smorgasbord of just like they were like the BC boys of science fiction, man. They got to just
like it's called everything. Time Quest. I want to say, mm-hmm. I'm gonna find it. I know he
the fun they had just pilfering from every source, you know, just like Led Zeppelin, just take a fucking a paragraph of Lem, you know. And you can just make a TV show out of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You could make a whole series on a paragraph of Lem.
And like that's the whole I always thought that was the whole hidden message of the Beatles documentary on Apple, that last Let It Be sessions thing that they released. And there's that one scene where they talk about where they had just purchased a new songbook. So essentially, these lords would purchase these songbooks, give them to Sir George Salty and the Beatles, and they would crib samples from these old classic songs that could captivate people. So like a song like Blackbird. You think McCartney wrote Blackbird? It's probably like some 16th century lute ballad that was in a songbook that he probably riffed on. And that's what I think that Mal guy was all about. He was like the historian of samples, and he would give them these like nuggets from the songbooks that they could play, and no one could give them copyright because the lords and whatever or the label owned all the shit.
Yeah, that Mal guy is interesting. He's there all the time, right? You hardly hear about him, right? Like, what's his name?
Mal Evans.
Evans, yeah.
But I think he was like some sort of like autistic genius, like a Brian Wilson type, and they just kept him around because he could just feed him that's what they wanted Kanye West to be for Jay-Z. It's just a producer, not a rapper. Just stay in the studio, kid. Just when we need a beat, you have the freshest beats. We'll always go to you. He's like, no, I'm my own thing, right? That's what is. But Mal couldn't do that because, you know, Mal was this cretin. But he probably had his hand in most of those. But yeah, Wolfram to take the French, right? The German to take the French. It's like if all of modern Hollywood science fiction comes from Metropolis, right? We talk about Citizen Kane as far as the greatest movie ever made, but Metropolis is just like, what?
Oh, yeah. That's Metropolis is amazing.
To have experienced that in a theater?
Right.
Out at the time must have been like, you thought Avatar was a trip, or 2001 was a trip.
Metropolis is still more of a trip than Avatar, you know.
But to go from French mythology to German Baroqueness, right, to amplify it, the Grail Quest. I mean, that carries right up into what the whole Nazi thing is about. Because wasn't Hitler obsessed about?
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. Because Hitler was all into this stuff, and so it's interesting to see people who are just driven by relics and magic, whatever. Because, yeah, the secret history of the Grail and all the shows and...
Otto Rahn, you know that guy? He went down to the south of France. He was a Nazi as well. I'm not sure if he was like a inner circle, but he went on his own Grail quest to the south of France to figure out what it was. And he made the same connection with the troubadours and the Albigensian church. As being the kind of fount of the Grail stuff.
The McKenna Brothers Grail Quest. And the mushroom cap, which is the silver platter, right? And the UFO.
Well, that's the other side of this, isn't it? So, like...
Do they talk about it as the Grail in the invisible landscape? Do they...
I mean, isn't it always lurking?
They probably say it explicitly. I want to check that out.
They would have to have, but
yeah.
I mean,
well, so that was part of this whole trip too. So to go into conspiracy and then you do the John Allegro.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Religion is all symbolism of psychedelic ritual.
Well, that's all. That is all sexual biological through the mushroom.
Yeah, so that's on the esoteric side of it, right?
Yeah.
The exoteric side.
Yeah.
See. It's not in the index. I'm looking at the visible landscape, but I'm sure there must be something in here with that.
I've said this before on air, but I gave away a first edition copy of The Invisible Landscape. I slightly regret it.
I think I did too. I just left it at a friend's house.
I had paid $170 for it.
Oh, wow.
It was a first edition hardback copy of The Invisible Landscape, 1974. And I must have been suicidal because I was giving shit away. I must have read the writing on the wall.
So that, you know, the thing that I'm actually drawn toward is the moment that the natives in the West were experiencing the wasteland the worst, which mm-hmm. was, so like you think about the Nez Perce War and the tribes in the West, they were being like moved from their land to less desirable land, either like in Oklahoma or elsewhere or into reservations in the West. This mm-hmm. religion started, the dreamer religion.
The ghost dance kind of stuff. Is right. that what you're talking about?
So, but it's the same idea as the Grail, that if you know, the thought was they were getting away from the true ways, and that if they behaved in a way, you know, that was in accord with, you know, the way one should live their life, that the reality would wash over this. You know, it's that Gospel of Thomas, you know, the heaven is spread across the face of the earth, but we don't have the eyes to see it kind of thing, that if you could just, if they could just dance enough and play their drums, they could change reality.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where my Grail has taken me.
Well, I don't know if we talk about that, but that kind of goes into the thought of Owen Barfield. You know, did I mention that to you, Doug, or to anybody? I wrote about him in my blog, but he was an inkling. Like, he was a friend of, like an old friend of C.S. Lewis, and then he became a friend of Tolkien and the other guys. But he was also a follower of Rudolf Steiner, and so he had this idea that of participation, like original participation, which is what you were saying, like where at that time, through dance, through drumming, through whatever, you could fully, through your words, basically, you could alter reality, you know? Yeah. There wasn't any split between word and things, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then there's a second phase where we got out of that and we considered, like, the word as being higher than things, you know. He calls it Barfield calls it idolatry, right?
Yeah, iconography.
Yeah, idolatry in the sense that we we're more concerned with categories, with our own linguistic categories, than linking them up with actual objects, right? We consider ourselves separate from things. But then he sees it eventually as a time of like a final participation, where we can go back into that original form of like tribal participation, but we still have intact our own subjectivity, right?
God.
And his sense, he was a Christian, and he said that was sort of the message of Christ. That's when that idea of going back to the garden, but Christ gave us the example of the individual who could do that, you know, instead of in the original participation where there was no individuality, right? It was a complete collective, that involved humans and the rest of nature. But I think that's it's kind of true, right? Like it really depends on our way of looking at reality, right? If it's if it's a sort of materialism, obviously that kind of thing is impossible, right? But if it's a matter of mind above or beyond matter, and actually matter emerging from mind, not the other way around, then we could be swinging back into that, right? Where words become, words and things become inseparable, right? Synonymous again, you know?
Well, that's what a comment left on X right now is static. A comment made on a podcast ripples, but is static. But a comment made to someone in VR, a virtual reality space, which is available now, it has been labeled as assault, right? And I think we saw the first VR assault case before we saw the first Twitter assault case. But both are now being considered actually viable crimes, right? Crimes in cyberspace.
Right.
I get drunk and I go on the internet and I wake up and I'm serving 5 to 10 and I got no recourse. And I go, I was drunk. I go, you were in a car. You were on the internet. Mm-hmm. You were in the moving vehicle. Mm-hmm. You interacted and caused damage. It's quantifiable now. They're probably right, right? If we're playing in this game, they're probably correct.
Oh, especially if eventually you can make things explode by your words.
Well,
make your refrigerator, somebody's refrigerator door blow off.
What if all my Facebook comments from 2005 were admissible? I don't know what's in there. I don't know what I've said.
Yeah.
But could they still hurt somebody? I guess that's the argument now, is because it just takes someone to put it into a spotlight to hurt somebody with it at this point.
Well, that's the thing with podcasts. I was thinking before, okay, no one's going to go through all these podcasts and find something that I said, you know, but if you could have like instant transcripts made of podcasts.
Now we can.
And they can be scanned, they can be searched, they can be altered, you know.
My thought was that if maybe our little human brains aren't robust enough for the true grokking of sync, and that what we were doing was like training wheels for an AI thing.
Oh man.
Like we were teaching
Fisher King Price, my first sync mobile.
Yes.
Well, it could be, you know, like during COVID, you know, everybody taking online classes. And you're just using Google Classroom or whatever as an LMS, and you're just feeding the AI ways to teach people. All these teachers, thousands, maybe millions of people across the world, just making their jobs obsolete, you know?
I told some teachers what my plan was, what my grand vision was for the classroom. And at the end of it, someone said, "You're making us obsolete." I go, "I know." Isn't it great?
Well,
like, no. It's already happened. Me as a math teacher is going to be obsolete. If you can hook up a kid to NBC at 3 years old, and they don't know why they still watch Jimmy Fallon religiously, you know, you can hook a kid up to IXL math for kids at 3 years old and let them force them into that 20 minutes a day every day for the rest of their life from 3 to 10, and they're going to be a genius at math.
Yeah, doctors are becoming obsolete. Like, what do you do when you go to a doctor? You give the doctor your symptoms.
Yeah.
he goes through a database and then prescribes medication, you know. That's AI is going to be able to do all of that, you know. It's like lawyers too. Lawyers do the same thing, you know.
But education, you still need a conductor. No matter how much you transfer it to robots, you need a human conductor.
Yes.
It's of that age.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's... with a skilled conductor, arranging human beings at 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 in projects, that's irreplaceable. But it's just that the bureaucracy of Western capitalism has made education a business.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like, that's what I've thought of myself too, is like just a conductor, like an energy conductor.
Oh, and yeah, right, when it's like
you're sort of a lightning rod. You have to have the most energy in the classroom of anybody.
Yeah
And that's why teachers burn out, you know, because eventually you get to the point you can't sustain that.
Well, you can, but you have to make sacrifices.
Well, just your mental and physical health, there's limitations.
Well,
if you've done it for a long time, like, it just gets to the point where it's like, it's hard to keep at that level.
Oh, God damn it. This is 3.5 hours.
What's that?
This is 3.5 hours.
Yeah, we've been on the call for a minute. It's time for me to.
You're a soldier. You're a soldier.
And so, we'll read Mallory. We're gonna find the Grail. We're gonna meet some new guys. Some.
I gotta whisper some sweet nothings as Nor.
Mm-hmm. Galahad.
No, without you.
Oh, you wanna whisper some sweet. Yeah.
No, I guess I can, because.
Are you going to bed, Doug?
I'm going to go to bed.
Okay, so solstice is next, and Mallory.
Winter solstice, Mallory.
Okay, I'm gonna dip into all the other ones too.
Yes, of course. The
Percivals, which I missed.
I don't think I'm going to do the continuations, but I'm going to check out the Robert de Boron.
How about the French Vulgate cycle?
I think it's in the Mallory.
Yeah, yeah. He basically takes it over, right?
Right.
But I want to see if he changes it. I'll do a couple of those.
I'm curious to see if I'll go back through any of the Chrétien.
Chrétien. Yeah.
It's strange. It's the French way to say Christian, and so
is it really?
Yep.
And then
no, it isn't.
He might be.
Is it really? Is it Christian Leroy or some shit like that? Chrétien, was it?
Christian de Troyes.
Was it Christian what of what?
Of Troy.
Of Troy.
Really?
De Troyes.
Yeah.
Jesus, it's like beyond, it's not even cliche.
He may have been, one of the things I read was, so
it's fucking clay.
Cervantes might have been Jewish, right?
Yeah.
Cervantes was Jewish?
And Chrétien may have been Jewish too.
It's the interesting thing though, is like the, that's when the Kabbalah was coming out at that time too, is in the 12th century in Provence, the exact same area.
Oh my gosh, you're going to get there. Yeah. All right.
So, but you read Scholem, who talks about that, and he's saying, well, there can't be a connection to the Albigensians because they were too dualist, right? But then you have people like Ezra Pound saying these guys weren't dualists at all. That was a smear that the Catholic Church put on them, and they're actually continuation of the Eleusinian mysteries, right? Which, if that's the case, then what was actually happening in Provence at the time in the 12th century?
This is what was happening.
It was like a synthesis of all the mystery schools.
Yes.
Coming together all at once.
Not long.